This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hello, everyone from around the world. We are live on Facebook and, of course, on the podcast from our Lineup Media Group studios. And this is the show where we bring you the most innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds who love the challenge, the status quo. And I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. We are so happy you can join us for yet another exciting show. It's going to be an explosive one with lots of information when it comes to the athletic performance and long-term talent development of players in the game of baseball. Now, our topic is going to vary within the critical areas of athletic development, and the topics are going to include things like sleeping habits, nutrition, injury prevention, strength and conditioning, and of course, rest and recovery. Now, we're also going to discuss why it's better to be a multi-sport athlete when you're growing up, reasons why kids drop out of baseball, and how important are the volunteer coaches are to the long-term development of an athlete. We finally are going to dig deep into why practice organization is one of the most critical parts of a coach's development phase of their program. Now, before we start, you know, we want to welcome all our new listeners around the world and thank you for joining the show. If you haven't joined the show and you're just listening, you can go to baseballoutsidethebox.com, click on the iTunes and Stitcher logo, join the show, get past updates, and listen to all the shows anytime you like. If you've been a listener for a while and you really love the show, please do us a favor. Give us a 5-star rating and review. And, you know, that's just going to help the show propel and, you know, develop further around the world and get more listeners on the show. So thanks for doing that. Now, let me tell you about our guest. He is exciting. He's motivating. He's intelligent. He's one of the best within his own industry. And he has a passion for helping coaches and players and parents around the world when it comes to the development of athletes. Jeff Kreshel hails from the beautiful country of Canada. He's the director of athlete performance and talent developer for Crush Performance. He's a world traveler as a consultant for Major League Baseball International, where he oversees the strength and development program on a global scale. Now, he's known as the Crusher on his famous radio and podcast show, which I listen to all the time, have not missed a show. One of the best shows when it comes to sports development anywhere in the world. And I recommend it highly to all our Baseball Outside the Box listeners. And all you got to do is go to crushperformance.com and listen to the show. It'll also be on our show notes. Now, you know, Jeff graduated with a bachelor's degree in kinesiology from the University of Calgary. He's worked with professionals and nationally ranked athletes all over the world on strength and conditioning. We've talked about this on the show many times. Baseball Canada definitely is one of the best coaching programs on a long-term development scale anywhere in the world. Jeff has been part of that program, especially as a consultant on the strength and conditioning part. And he's also worked with the Toronto Blue Jays at the major league level, overseeing the entire strength and conditioning program within their organization. So I told you it's going to be exciting. Sit back, relax. You might want to buckle up because this show is going to take you on a wild ride. Welcome, everyone, to Baseball Outside the Box. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. We have a great show for you today. First of all, I want to welcome all our listeners around the world and also live on Facebook, all everybody watching the show right now. We're thrilled to have you on live. And as we go on live, you have any questions, just send us a message through Facebook. We've got a great show. First of all, I just want to welcome a great friend. He's known as the Crusher on his outstanding radio show and podcast. His name is Jeff Kreshel. We call him Crush, but he's known as the Crusher. He's got a great show also. We're going to tell you about that later. First of all, let me welcome Jeff Kreshel to Baseball Outside the Box. How you doing, Jeff?
Great, Pete. Great, man. Thanks for the intro. How are you doing?
Man, I'll tell you what. We're doing fantastic. I just actually got back in from Rome, a little personal stuff along with some baseball business. So I'm trying to catch up on that jet lag, but nobody knows jet lag better than you do.
There's an art form to handling jet lag. I'll tell you that much. There's no question about it. So I hope you're hanging in there, man.
Hey, that might be, maybe we should have just started the show with that. Tell everybody how to deal with it.
Yeah. Well, hey, it's tough. And you know what? If you look at baseball, I mean, look at the game of baseball at the professional level. You know, sleep science has trickled into the world of athlete development and sport performance. And it's become, you know, one of the top priorities for human development and human performance. There's no doubt about it. So, you know, as we learn more about circadian rhythms and how the body operates on the 24-hour cycle, this whole idea of sleep, Pete, has become really, really important.
Well, I'll tell you what. You know what? It was interesting because not only, I guess I was reading your mind because I heard your show on sleep. You had a specialist on. I thought it was an outstanding show. We're going to, you know, and I'm going to tell everybody about your show and how to get to it. So I figured you would have brought that in perfectly. And, you know, since we're on that, let's just give the audience a little brief background on how important it is for kids to get their sleep and why it's so important.
Yeah, well, number one, you know, in our programs, Pete, you know, whether we're talking our baseball guys, our Olympic athletes, whether it's our NHL guys, our pro golfers, it doesn't matter. And it also doesn't matter whether we're talking about our young grassroots developing programs or our world-class elite athletes. In our programs, we have a hierarchy of development. And I'll just outline it for you so everybody can kind of get an idea of where this conversation is going to go here. Because, you know, there are some fundamentals when it comes to development, Pete, that are absolutely essential no matter what you're talking about. And you can apply this to academics in school. I mean, we work with entertainers and really, really world-class musicians. Anywhere there's human performance, I believe, you know, these priorities for development are very important. And in sport, there's four that we start with, and these are non-negotiable in all our programs. As a matter of fact, you know, we work with athletes and organizations that wanted to go a different way. And you know what? Unfortunately, we just walk away because, you know, until they're ready, until an athlete or an organization is ready to really hear how it has to go, you just sort of got to sit back and let them figure it out. In our world, here's the priorities for development. Number one, first and foremost, is rest and recovery. And inside of that is sleep, because nothing else matters if that isn't taken care of. When we build a program, Pete, we look at the competitive schedule, or if it's in the off season, the workout schedule, training schedule, and we design all of the volume and intensity of work based on the amount of rest and recovery an athlete can get in a 24-hour period. And the most important part of that 24-hour period is the length and quality of sleep. So it doesn't matter what level our athletes are at or what organization or what sport we're dealing with, rest and recovery and sleep are number one. Second, nutrition and hydration. Number two, we could talk all day about that by itself. Yeah. Number three, and this is something that's really, really important for every single one of our baseball organizations and players that we work with, posture setup and range of motion. There's no sport that is more, or athletes who are more susceptible to injury because of the motion of throwing than baseball players. So posture and range of motion become important. And then movement, the fun part, movement. Those are the top four priorities when it comes to developing real solid long-term development programs and high-performance programs.
Well, you know, for our audience on Facebook and all over the world, we are on with Jeff Kreshel, Director of Athletic Performance and Talent Development for Crush Performance. You heard the intro, everybody around there. You heard the intro on Jeff. I consider him the best in the development of the sport, not just baseball, but all kinds of sports. But I really reference him a lot for the game of baseball. And Jeff, since we're talking about that, let's talk about the nutritional aspect. We'll just hit a little bit on each topic. Talk about, you know, because we have a lot of young kids out there listening to the show. We have obviously a lot of parents. Talk about the nutritional aspect on a basic standpoint. Why it's so important, and what should players be eating prior to games? Give them a chance to have a better performance.
Yeah, and Pete, you know what? This is really confusing for a lot of people. You'd think something that's so important just for, you know, everyday life and, you know, human sustenance, you know, this is just a key component to being a human being. You think we'd have it down a little bit better. But there's a lot of issues inside of the nutrition industry right now. And, you know, the big problems that we're seeing revolve around misinformation and misguidance and, you know, the power. It's, you know, we call it high tech ignorance, and it's nobody's fault. But we are so bombarded with the marketing of big food companies. I think it's very difficult unless you're studying the science or you're close to people who really understand, you know, human biochemistry and nutritional sciences. It's really difficult for parents, coaches, and athletes to keep their heads above water here. Here's the big message. Here's the really good news for everybody. It's not that difficult, Pete. It's not that difficult. When we look at nutrition, we kind of treat it the same way we treat rest and recovery and sleep. We look at our nutritional programs in 24-hour cycle. Pete, our athletes never make more than a 24-hour mistake. It's not possible because we have it mapped out. Now, whether they compete on a particular day, whether they're traveling and competing, whether it's just a travel day or just a training day or a rest day, we program in the nutrition according to what's happening over the course of that 24-hour period. And when you do that, it makes it really, really simple, Pete. And so the big message here is, balance. I'm just telling you, every athlete might require something a little bit different. So I don't think there's a textbook answer that we can give people here, Pete, but just a good balance over the course of a day is the real key. And when it comes to hydration as well, I think we may have lost our way there a little bit. You know, in the last decade, we've had a lot of science looking at the impact of dehydration and the impact of hydrating properly on performance. There is no doubt that, you know, proper hydration will enhance performance and cognitive function. And in games like baseball, that's critical. Decision making and reaction time and just being there over the course of a 9-inning game, 7-inning game is really critical. And it can be influenced like nothing else through liquid hydration or liquid nutrition. So there's a lot of things going on when it comes to hydration that we're learning now. And the rule of thumb in our programs, from our world-class Major League Baseball players to our grassroots development, is water. Water, water, water. And we don't necessarily say how much water over the course of a day, but we look at how much water you lose over the course of a training period. And again, it works on a 24-hour cycle.
Now, you know, we have a lot of people on the show that listen from all over. A lot of them are, you know, moms and dads that are coaching youth programs. And, you know, obviously the food aspect is some of it's common sense. And, you know, when it comes to what they should be eating, you know, is it okay, you know, like before games, to have bananas, fruits, or during games? Do you eat anything during games, or is it mostly hydration, water, 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 as you're saying?
Yeah, over the course of the day, Pete, we do look at strategic eating times. We call it nutrition timing. So, you know, prior to a game, like, look, we like to have our meals scheduled out over the course of the day. You know, if you're playing a game at 7 o'clock, you know, we probably like to have your major meal around 4:30 or 5. You know, a good balanced meal, 4:30 or 5. And then 45 minutes, an hour to 45 minutes prior to your game, have another just good, well-balanced snack. You know, it doesn't have to be high carbohydrate, doesn't have to be high protein, just a good, balanced, you know, smaller meal. And then pregame, you know, we just, depending on the athlete and depending what you normally eat, you know, you've had a chance to travel the world. I've been all over the world, and different cultures eat different foods. So, you know, when we look at like pregame eating, make sure it's something you're familiar with. We prefer our athletes train and practice their pregame eating because it can be really impactful. But it has to be something you're used to. And typically pregame, we look at, you know, 40 minutes to an hour prior to, and then snacks during the game. No question about it, Al or Pete. But one of the things we really pay attention to, and this is one of the real hot topics right now in nutrition, is, Pete, we really, really are conscious of the sugar intake for athletes. Some of the research that's come out just in this last year in regards to the impact on human performance and sugar consumption is alarming. And the fact that it can, you know, reduce nitric oxide dramatically in the human body. But not only that, for athletes, it can reduce testosterone in the athletes. So we try to stay away from the high sugar, high energy, or high sugar energy drinks, and even the sport drinks we're very cautious about.
You know what? I'm thrilled that you hit sugar because, you know, I've listened a lot, probably every one of your shows. And if you're a listener out there, Jeff Crochelle has a radio show and podcast. You just go to crushperformance.com and you'll see all his shows on there. They are outstanding. I listen to them all the time, and I believe that they're just, you know, it's one of the best podcasts, if not the best podcast out there when it comes to sports performance. And, you know, I don't even know where to start. You know why? Because you mentioned sugar. But I want to go back a second because you said you're going to train and practice for pregame meals. Explain that.
Yeah, so you know, we've all been invited to a training camp or a tryout, or you know, maybe we've been asked to play on a team that we haven't played with, a travel team or a tournament team, or we get into an environment where the food's incredibly different. Well, you know, the type of food you eat on a regular basis, your body becomes accustomed to it, and also, you know, your preference, the personal preferences, you know, vary between individual and individual player. So when we talk about practicing your food choices, and this is something we're really, really conscious of with our Olympic athletes, you know, where we have these big major events. When we do our trial runs, when we do our practice runs, take them just as an example with our Olympic athletes, you know, we will set up a day where we create game day. We create competition day. And that is from the time you wake up, what do you do, to the time your race would be and when the race or competition is supposed to happen. You know, we go right through to the warm-up and simulated competition. And part of that strategy, Pete, is making sure that what you eat and what you consume in terms of timing and, you know, what the food stuff or drink is exactly the same as game day. And that's a real cool strategy that people can use, you know, just as you go practice your baseball or get set for a tournament or a game. And it really can help get your body back in line, but also your mindset as well. And again, this opens up a whole Pandora's box of conversation. It's one of the reasons, Pete, that we have a very, very consistent warm-up. One of the things, on a similar tone, one of the things that we really do to help our athletes out is we run a regular, consistent warm-up before every practice and game. So not only are we getting the body ready, but we also get the mind and the psyche and the physiology set for competition. Very similar strategy with practicing your food and your hydration as well.
Hey, you're listening and watching also on Facebook Live, Baseball Outside the Box. I'm on with Jeff Crochelle, Director of Athletic Performance and Talent Development for Crush Performance. I want to give out a shout-out to Sandra Chang from Mexico City watching the show, and also my very good friend Tony Garofalo joining us. He's the former Chicago Cubs big league trainer who we'll have on the show coming up soon. So I just want to give them a shout-out for listening to the show. Hey, Crush, you know, you mentioned sugar, and obviously I thought you talked about it great, and it's an important topic. I want to go to your last show because I was listening to it, and unfortunately go on a sad part, but this is important because you addressed it on your show as extremely important. There was a young man, unfortunately, at age of 16 years old who died, if I believe I'm correct, on a caffeine overdose. I want you to tell us about that and also, you know, warn our audience, you know, why – you know, using too much caffeine critical to, you know, not only your life, but your development.
Oh, Pete. So, you know, this is a heart-wrenching story. So in April, there was a young 16-year-old high school student in South Carolina who collapsed in his classroom and unfortunately passed away. And at the time, nobody's really sure what happened or why it happened. So, you know, last week, the autopsy report came out, and it turns out that this young, healthy 16-year-old passed away due to complications associated with caffeine consumption. And so when they retraced the steps and started investigating, they found out that he consumed a McDonald's latte, a large Mountain Dew, and an energy drink, we don't know which one, but an energy drink, all within a 2-hour period. And we know that caffeine, you know, is a central nervous system stimulant, and it affected him to the point where it caused a heart arrhythmia that stopped his heart, and unfortunately he passed away. And Pete, this is just, you know, one of the conversations that we have to have you know, with our young athletes, with our children, with our students. Because, you know, when I went back and saw the press interview with the father, it was a powerful message. You know, the young boy had just started learning how to drive. And, you know, like every parent, the father had mentioned that, you know, they lay awake at night worrying about, you know, car accidents and those kinds of things. And you would never think that something like caffeine would take your child from you. And so, you know, many things that we need to talk about. This just reminds us, you know, the things that we can't take for granted. And when you look at the market right now, Pete, it's really concerning. So you're right. On our show, we've dedicated one show each month to something I call the War on Sugar. And the show originally came about because of my mom and her association with early onset Alzheimer's and what we now know about high glycemic diets and degeneration of the brain. But also, if you're okay for a quick story here, one of the things that really set me off is I was driving home one day. I was working with some hockey athletes in the city, and I was driving home, and my wife called me, and she just asked me to stop off and get a quart of milk. And I said, no problem. So I just stopped off at a little convenience store. I walked in there, and there's two little duffers at the counter, just in front of me, and they got their hockey gear on, right? They're going to hockey practice. They got their parkas on, you know, they got their shin pads on, and they're just getting ready to go. And they turn around, and the boys were, you know, maybe 10 or 11 years of age. And they turn around, and one of them's holding a big 1 liter sport drink, and he's got a Snickers chocolate bar. And the other kid had one of those super can Monster energy drinks, and he had a bag of chips. And I just look at the boys. I go, boys, hey, you guys heading to practice? Yeah, we're just heading to practice. And they're kind of looking at me like stranger danger. Like, what is this guy all about? I said, hey boys, do your parents know what you're buying here? And yeah, they just gave us the money. They're right upstairs. We're heading to practice. And then they ran off. And Pete, I got to tell you, I just sat there for a second. I'm going, okay, what was wrong with that picture? Okay. And if we looked what those young boys were consuming to get ready for their hockey practice, two things occurred to me. One, either the parents and the kids obviously have no idea how bad those things are, not just for the average person, but for sport performance, but two, how good these companies market to people, right? And how misleading some of the marketing is. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've dedicated this whole movement to our war on sugar that's really encompassed a lot of great issues now beyond sugar even. And I'm glad we have a chance to talk about it today.
Absolutely. And I encourage everybody to go to crushperformance.com, go to Jeff's podcast and radio show, listen to the shows, because you will learn so much, not just about sports performance, but about, you know, enhancing your own performance, your own lifestyle. And you know what? I got to tell you now, if you didn't know, you know, Jeff's from Canada, and he travels all over the world, even for Major League Baseball as a consultant. Jeff, you know, and this is just facts, and I know I'm going to get some emails, you know, that I'm being critical here. But because of you and because of my good friend Orville Germain in Canada, you know, I personally watch sugar. Everything I eat, I watch how much sugar there is in it. And I encourage everybody to do that. But what I find is, especially here in the U.S., you know, we have, I mean, it's an epidemic. I mean, it's an epidemic. It's an overweight epidemic. You know, and I got to believe, and again, you know, I'm sure I'm going to get some emails, but I got to believe it starts at the home. It starts with the families, because I'm looking at players and I'm looking at parents. And all I got to do is watch, you know, look at the parents, how overweight some of them are. And then you wonder why the kids are eating the wrong things. So we got to educate the parents.
Yeah, and you're right. And education is the key. And that's the reason shows like this, Pete, are so important. This little conversation, maybe we get a few parents and coaches, you know, thinking about it and maybe talking to their teams about it, Pete. And that's exactly right. And that's exactly right. And we're up against it. I'm not lying. And you know what? This is one of the things I love about sport. It's such a great platform to start delivering great messages. So, you know, when it comes to our sport drinks, we know that kids drink more when there's flavor involved. Yeah. So, you know, if you're going to buy a sport drink, whatever it might be, you know, we go like 20%, 15% sport drink, the rest water, you know, and we mix it down, we dilute it with water, and we do that with our pro guys as well. And I'm telling you right now, if you're eating well over the course of the day, there is not a baseball game on the planet where you'll need to replace your electrolytes. So just keep that in mind when we go out and we're getting our young athletes or even our high performance guys ready for competition. It's a 24-hour job, Pete, and if you start thinking about it that way, it gets really, really easy.
And you hear it all the time. I mean, I realize it's not easy because, you know, I think some of the things that are tough for parents and players too, I believe, and you read this a lot in the newspapers, you know, a lot of the food that's being made is being made with, you know, some kind of stuff that is addicting. So now, you know, it becomes a habit, you know, you're addicted to this type of food and it's tough to get off of it. I mean, any advice to kind of make that change, you know, where, you know, you just have to stop because, you know, it's like smoking. It's easy to say stop smoking, but how do you do it?
Oh, and listen, you hit the nail on the head. Trust me. We know, Pete, listen, we know for a fact that sugar and sweet foods are as addicting as any of the other addictions. There are great research projects going on as we speak. We're actually doing a couple of them right now. But we're looking at how the brain responds to the food we eat. And here's what we found, okay? When we do MRIs of the brain and the brain response and chemical responses in the body to the food we eat, it is showing a profile that's exactly the same as what we would see with somebody who's addicted to heroin or alcohol or cigarettes. It's the exact same profile. So you don't know how right you are when you say some of these foods are addicting, because food is addicting. And, you know, if you travel around the world and you just came from one of the most incredible places in the world when it comes to food, Italy. If you go, yeah, and if we were to take an average, let's say Canadian or American, and blindfold them and plop them down in Tuscany and gave them just a classic Mediterranean diet, it would take 10 to 12 days, maybe 2 weeks, to recalibrate their taste buds to really, really enjoy that food. We have been so programmed here, mm-hmm, to enjoy the sugar and the sweetness and the carbohydrates. It just takes time to adapt, but it can be done. It's just a strategic and deliberate attempt on a daily basis just to curb those things a little bit. And you don't have to cut cold turkey. You do not. You just have to slowly make some smart changes. And to learn how to do that, it's not that hard. I mean, we can help you out. If you go to our website, and I know you can even contact through Pete, contact us, and we've got more information than you could ever need when it comes to, you know, steering nutrition in the right direction.
That's great stuff, Chuck. We really appreciate that. And, you know, let's go on. Let's continue, you know, the topic of athletic performance, talent development from Crush Performance with Jeff Crochelle. You mentioned on your third topic, I believe, or third most important point, was posture and range of motion. Let's tell our audience what you mean by posture and range of motion and what areas the, you know, kids need to be improving in.
Right. Well, Pete, let's cut to the chase here. Let's get to the brass tacks, so to speak, when it comes to high performance sport. The world that we operate in, you know, when it comes to high performance sport, and especially in baseball right now, injury prevention is one of the top priorities when we look at programming for our professional and elite athletes. And, you know, one of the things we're seeing, if you look at the amateur draft in baseball, look, it's coming up around the corner, and I'm watching it with interest. Mm-hmm. Pete, I'm watching it with interest with a little asterisk inside. One of the things that I'll be looking at very closely in this amateur draft for Major League Baseball is how many of these young athletes have already had a Tommy John or shoulder surgery. Because over the last 3 years, the numbers have been the highest in history, and they've continued to climb. So, you know, one of the things we're really facing in baseball is this epidemic of injuries. And so when we trace back and try to understand what is going on, you know, we see dropout rates in minor sports, you know, they're astronomical right now. It's estimated that 7 of 10 kids are dropping out of sport by the age of 13 for a number of reasons. But we know that once an athlete gets injured in sport, And if it happens a second time, they're done. And they're not done just for a little bit. They're done for life. So, you know, two things that we're really, really focusing on. One, injury prevention, and then long-term development, healthy long-term development. So one of the key areas you need to focus on, if you're going to help a young athlete or even your high-performance guys perform at their top level, is posture and joint function. And when we talk about posture, we look at skeletal alignment, muscle imbalances, we look at range of motion around particular joints. And in sports like baseball, Pete, where everything's so one-sided, mm-hmm. you get massive asymmetries. You get this massive imbalance in the body that has to be corrected. And when that imbalance gets off by a certain degree, and some studies are pointing to this 15-degree mark or 15% mark, where, you know, if your posture gets out of alignment 15 degrees plus or minus from what we would consider a normal healthy posture, risk of injury goes up exponentially, Pete. So one of the things we're really focusing on now with our young athletes even is the idea of, you know, really corrective exercises built into a daily practice plan that will help offset the one-sided stress that we see in baseball. And it's proved to be incredibly powerful, man, like really, really powerful. And that's something I'm glad you brought it up, because it's something we want to share with everybody in the baseball community globally.
Well, you know, it leads into a perfect conversation, which we've had, you and I have had this talk many times, and I was reading somewhere about the draft. You talked about the draft, and they mentioned, I can't remember exact the numbers, but the numbers were extremely high, like you said, in injuries, but they were also extremely high with players that are drafted who played multiple sports. So now I'm assuming that multiple sports, if you're playing a single sport like baseball, that's not advantageous to your development.
Oh, Pete, my good man, the Pandora's box officially open right now, okay? Well, okay, so in as we explore the issues of injury in sport, and I'm telling you what, baseball is one of the major focuses in sports science right now, because injury rates right now are so high in baseball, it's staggering. It's staggering. And so we're trying to figure out why it's happening. Well, we know the one-sided issues are important to address. You know, we see the one-sided issues even in hockey, Pete. You know, right-handed players, left-handed players in hockey, certainly we see it in golf. We see the same issues in sports like tennis. You know, we don't see it typically in sports like swimming, where it's bilateral, you know, so those issues we're aware of. But when we look at baseball, did you know that in 2014, there were more elbow surgeries than the entire decade of the 1990s? Right? When we start breaking down the injuries and what's happening and the trends in the game of baseball, it gets scary, Pete. It gets scary. But we need to understand this history if we're going to try to define the problems so we can find solutions. And it's really interesting. And between 1994, well, we can just round it down to the last, you know, the last 12, 13 years, but last 18 seasons in baseball, if we go there and we look at the injuries and what's happened in professional baseball as sort of our guideline, there's been over $7.6 billion spent on players who couldn't play in the last 18 seasons. But here's the interesting thing. Nearly a third of those injuries over those 18 seasons have happened in the last 5 years.
Wow.
So, no, and Pete, these are alarming numbers. Once you get inside and you start seeing what's happening and the trends inside the game of baseball, there's some very alarming things going on, and we're trying to decipher it. So when we looked at the big picture, when we just took a step back and looked at the big picture, we know that in the last 5 to 10 years, the number of elbow injuries has skyrocketed like never before in the history of the game. So that gives us a little clue as to what we should be looking at. Well, if we take these players who are playing the game right now, and the average age, by the way, for a player breaking into Major League Baseball, not into professional baseball, but breaking into the big leagues, is right around 23 years of age, maybe a little older for pitchers, but on average, it's 23 years of age. So if we take this generation, say 2014, 2015, 2016, and we reverse those guys 10 years to when they're 12, 13 years of age, what is one of the things that has happened in the last decade, last 15 years, that might cause, you know, or result in these injury trends we're seeing? That's the way we looked at it. And, you know, what we came up with resounding consistency is specialization. If you go back 10 years, Pete, 10, 15 years, what started to happen in minor sports? And again, baseball is really up against it because we're seeing devastating injuries, serious injuries, but every sport is facing it right now. 10 years ago, 15 years ago, developmental sport turned into an industry. It turned into an industry where these academies, these private schools, these year-round programs started making income from developmental sport. And it steered development of our young athletes in a very, very different direction that we're now having to deal with. Does that make sense?
It makes a ton of sense. And then, and since we're on that, because, you know, we in the U.S. and I know in Canada and all over the world, actually, it's starting in other parts of the world. You know, you do have a lot of travel teams and they play all year round. They start them at 8 years old. That's why I'm glad you brought that up. And we obviously do have travel programs that do a good job. They understand the development all year round. They give kids a break. They give them a couple months off. You know, they encourage multi-sports. They don't, you know, they practice during the season. So there are good programs when it comes to travel ball. But it does, you know, it is creating injuries. And the injury I want to also discuss, which maybe we could help our audience with, and, you know, it's an injury that unfortunately, had, like you mentioned, it's happened a lot. How do you prevent the pitching injuries, you know, more than throwing, but the pitching part.
Right. So I have to talk about a couple things there, though. There are great programs. And in this world that we're living in, it's not going to change. We can't say don't go into year-round programs. We can't tell people to shut down the businesses of player development because that's how they're paying their mortgages and feeding their families. But what we can do, what we can do is we say, hey, let's collectively get really, really responsible. So if your young kid has decided that, man, I love baseball more than anything, you know, I don't really want to play another sport in the off season, I just want to keep doing baseball, that's fantastic. And personally, I don't think we should squelch that at all. But here's an opportunity for a program to take a 2 week break and maybe play some soccer and then maybe take another 2 week break and have all the kids train and work as a group together and maybe play basketball and then maybe go swimming and then, you know, maybe get the guys on their mountain bikes and do a little trek through, you know what I'm talking about? It's an opportunity for us to really take these kids who want to do baseball and expose them to other sports that are great for the game. You know, up here in Canada, Sport Canada, I'm just going to say I'm proud to work with these guys. You know, I work with them a little bit, and I've been involved in the past at the Olympic level at the University of Calgary. But I'm really proud of Sport in Canada, Pete, because of the long-term athlete development program. And for anybody who's listening, if you're involved in baseball or whatever sport you're in, I encourage you just to go on Google and Google, you know, Baseball Canada long-term athlete development. It is a beautiful overview. It's a brilliant program looking at the lifelong development of an athlete. But in Canada, interesting things happened in the last 5 years. We have Hockey Canada, who's one of the leading organizations, of course, up here in the Great White North. But Baseball Canada as well is one of the leading ones in terms of just being cutting edge and very progressive. And one of the things those two organizations have done recently, Pete, is they go, hey, here's the top, Baseball Canada's come out, hey, here's the top off-season sports for baseball players. And, you know, here's the six top sports for pitchers. Hockey Canada has also done the same. They've gone, hey, hockey families, hockey players, here's the top summer sports for hockey players, and here's the top summer sports for goaltenders. Baseball is one of those. You know, outdoor lacrosse is another one. So we've got this beautiful, you know, synergy going in the sports now where we're encouraging athletes to be multi-sport. Okay, so, Pete, listen, here's what we know, okay? If there's any way you can encourage or get your young athlete to be a multi-sport athlete, we encourage it. We know that specializing early, and typically, you know, other than maybe sports like gymnastics or figure skating, those are two sports where early specialization just, you know, it's more conducive for the development and performance of those athletes. But other than that, specializing before the age of 10 is a real, real risky game to play. Because specialization lowers the ceiling of potential. And I hope that makes sense, and I hope that's really clear. Specialization early lowers the end ceiling of potential for your young athlete. They might get a short-term advantage, you know, through those 12, 13, 14, even 8, 9, 10-year-old years. But in the long run, it can really, really set them back. And on top of that, when we look at the guys who make it pro, or when we look at the way colleges are now recruiting players, they're looking for multi-sport athletes, Pete.
Absolutely. We are listening to Baseball Outside the Box. You're also live on Facebook. Thanks for joining us. Please go to our Twitter page, at Baseball Out. We got a lot of tips on there. We're going to tell you about Jeff's. He also has his own podcast and radio show. It is outstanding. Go to crushperformance.com. Jeff, we're going to continue. I know this could be a 10-hour show with all the topics we're talking about. There's some great stuff here. And, you know, another hot topic, which we had mentioned and we're really going to get into now also, is, pitching injuries. I mean, it's just a common thing that's been going on. It's starting at young ages, and it's going on all the way to the major leagues. I know you can help our audience all over the world understand, you know, how we can, you know, there's no perfect science, I get it, but we can at least reduce the injuries or prevent them, you know, to a certain point. What's your recommendations there?
Yeah, so this is a really tough one. And aren't there a bunch of different camps right now, Pete, in terms of, you know, what should be done to help offset injuries, you know, in baseball?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I want to say there's some division as well. But, you know, if everybody just steps back and really looks at the big picture and mm-hmm. works together, I think we're going to have a great influence on the future of the game here. Listen, there's never been more opportunities in the game of baseball than there are right now. You know, we're seeing professional leagues on different continents. We're seeing, you know, signings to Major League Baseball from countries and areas that we've never had before. A gift in Ngope from being the first South African or African-born player, I should say, to ever play the game. That's just a true testament to where baseball is going. The opportunities in college are great. So I think, you know, if we just sort of step back and really think of the long-term big picture. You know, Pete, I think one of the problems that we see right now, and this is not just baseball, but with every sport, is we have this peak by Friday sort of attitude where, you know, we've got to be really, really good right now. And, you know, we've got to win and we have to compete right now. And I think that is really one of the big underlying scores to the issues we're seeing in terms of injuries in baseball right now, if that sort of makes sense to everybody.
Absolutely. You know, as good as I do, there's some great programs out there. USA Baseball, along with Dr. Andrews, you know, with ASMI, they've developed the Pitch Smart program, you know, to kind of give you a guideline, you know, of how many pitches a kid, you know, should be pitching in games. So there are some good programs out there trying to help. A lot of it's common sense. If you think about it from the standpoint of, you know, if a major league player, you know, everybody watches Major League Baseball. If a major league pitcher has certain restrictions and that pitcher is developed and he's strong and he's flexible and he's got all the great training going on, you know, obviously we've got to be very careful with young kids.
Yeah. And I think you hit the nail on the head there, Pete, when we look at, you know, some of the underlying issues that we see with our developing athletes. And I'm telling you right now, you know, one of the things that we do see, and the Pitch Smart program is great. And I encourage every single baseball family, coach, and player to go there just to check out, because there's some great information there. And the pitch count programs have been great. But there's another variable when we talk about stress and performance in sport. We have the variable of volume. And that's where the inning counts and pitch counts have really been effective at this point, Pete. But we also have to really start considering, I believe, much more along with the volume, the pitch counts and the inning counts. We really have to pay attention to the intensity of throwing. And there's an emerging science right now looking at, you know, what is throwing hard, right? Well, you know, at the major league level, we have so many stats there that we know exactly what's going on when it comes to, you know, the number of pitches and how hard guys are pitching. You know, if we go back to 2008, for example, how many pitches do you think there were in Major League Baseball in 2008 over 100 miles an hour? Just take a wild guess. What do you think?
How many pitchers total?
How many pitches? Yeah, how many pitches do you think were thrown in Major League Baseball in 2008? How many of those pitches do you think were over 100 miles an hour?
I'd say just a few.
Yeah, a very few. There's like 60 to 65 pitches that were recorded in Major League Baseball over 100 miles an hour in 2008. In 2016, there was almost 1,400.
Wow.
So, yeah, so we're seeing this huge push, you know, and part of it is because we're getting really smart with how we train our athletes. The performance is coming. You know, we can train guys to throw 90, 95, you know, to 100 miles an hour, and we're seeing it grow and grow and grow. Here's one of the issues, though. Here's one of the associated issues that go along with that. You know, based on the research that we have, Pete, you know, if we look at 92 miles an hour as sort of being the breaking point, because in the current research, that is the breaking point. And this is at Major League Baseball now.
Mm-hmm.
For every mile an hour that a pitcher throws over 92 miles an hour, the increase of Tommy John or UCL injury goes up by 15%. That's 1.5. So for every wow. mile an hour over 92 miles an hour, the risk of elbow surgery goes up 15%. And get this, though, once you hit 5 miles an hour, so once you get to that 96, 97, 98 range, the risk goes up 98%.
Wow.
And that speaks to volumes on how we have to start paying attention to throwing intensities.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, does that make sense? I mean, it's alarming. It's alarming when you look at the numbers.
And Jeff, I'd assume, you know, again, if we use some common sense, if we look at the math, you know, we know what a youngster, if they're throwing 70 miles an hour, whatever it is, what it equates to at the major league level speed from their distance. And, you know, I've always heard you got to be real careful with the kids that throw harder than anybody else. So if you're a 12-year-old and you got 2-3 kids that throw harder than everybody else, you got to be really cautious with these kids.
You have to be incredibly cautious, Pete. And therein lies one of the keys to, you know, really helping kids enjoy and develop in the game of baseball. Because yep. here's what happens. You know it, I know it. We see it every single weekend on every single ball field. The kids that throw hard get put on the mound.
Absolutely.
And unfortunately, they get put on the mound for way too many pitches and way too often. So here's the rule of thumb. And there's great normative data now for almost every single age group. If you and again, I don't have the numbers in front of me right now. So I'm throwing numbers out just sort of loosely here, but I think we'll really shed light on a trend. So mm-hmm. let's just say, for example, I can't remember the exact numbers. I'll get them for you because I have them. But let's just say, for example, for 12-year-olds, the average fastball, what would it be, Pete? You know, like maybe 50, 48, 50, 55 miles an hour, let's just say.
Yeah, right around there, maybe a little bit towards 60 also, but yeah, right around there.
Yeah, somewhere right around there for that age group. So if you have a kid that throws a percentage over the average for a fastball, let's say a kid that throws maybe low 60s to 60 miles an hour,
mm-hmm.
that player has to throw less. Either he has to throw less at that intensity or he has to throw with less intensity, so we could throw more often. Does that make sense? So we have to combine the two variables. We have to certainly watch the pitch counts and inning counts, but we also have to be very, very aware, Pete, that if a kid is throwing harder, we have to protect him more. And I think that's a message that every parent and coach really needs to hear.
Yeah, and something that we've talked about on the show before with some experts, and you know, that's considering, keep in mind, if the kid's got pretty good, you know, fundamentals. Now you got a young kid who's, you know, who has bad fundamentals. I mean, really just throwing with their arms. Could you imagine the damage that's going on there?
Right. So we have to be teaching technique along the way to everybody, of course. And that's another reason that, you know, through the developmental years, we want these kids playing every position out there. We don't just want to pigeonhole them into one position. We need them playing, you know, the multiple positions and at the same time teaching every athlete the art of the game. And that's part of the fun of development for sure.
Well, you mentioned it. You said enjoy the game of baseball. Some positive news for everybody around the world, especially in the U.S. You know, Jeff had talked about it, and it's an epidemic. You know, 70% of kids in all sports are dropping out under the age of 12. And we had seen stats in 3 years ago where up to 3 years ago, where, you know, 10% of players under the age of 12 in baseball were dropping out of the game. That was dramatic. But I could give some good news that are starting off a recent article. And Jeff, you got a lot to do with this because, you know, you're a consultant with Major League Baseball and the commissioner's initiative that called play ball which now they're showing an increase in participation, not just in the organized baseball, but just playing baseball for fun. And one of the things they talk about is, you know, just giving kids a bat, a ball, and a glove, letting them go out and play catch, letting them go out and hit, let them go out and run the bases. Don't teach them anything right away. Just let them do it for a little bit. Let them have some fun doing it, maybe some simulated games. This is what keeps kids in the game and keeps them playing longer. I know you're a big believer in that.
Yeah, sandlot baseball, boy, it's a lost art form, Pete. You know, we've organized and scheduled and structured everything to the point where kids aren't having fun anymore. Listen, there's some great research done recently on why kids play sport. And in our last podcast, we just talked to John O'Sullivan, who is the founder and CEO of Changing the Game Project. And, you know, we talked a bit about the dropout rates and why it's happening. And you know, University of Michigan did a great study, and there's some recent ones as well. But they surveyed the kids and say, hey, why do you play sport? And they also went deeper and asked, hey, why are you withdrawing from sport? Why are you dropping out? Injuries were up there. But listen to this. Some of the top reasons that kids are dropping out of sport is, one, they're being judged, two, they're being criticized and yelled at by their coaches and parents, and three, they're injured and just not having fun anymore. When they ask kids why they go and play a game, the number one reason by far was to have fun, to be with their pals, to be with their pals and go play a game. Listen to this. Winning wasn't even in the top 10.
Isn't that something?
It is. And, you know, if you really step back and remember when we were kids, man, I remember just getting the boys together with a glove. And, you know, we threw ice cream pail lids down for bases and we played ball, man. And I think that's a real lost art form. And again, that goes back probably a lot the way the industry of development has come along now. Everything's so structured and organized. So within those organizations, you know, and there are great ones out there, Pete, as you mentioned, if we could just have some just good old clean fun going on, I think will really bode well for the game. And you're right. The play ball is a great program.
Well, I'm glad you brought up John O'Sullivan, Changing the Game Project, because I listen to your podcast. As I told you, I listen to the whole thing and I love what he had to say. So I encourage people to go back and listen to that podcast show. You know, the other thing is, you know, when we, you know, it's interesting, having fun, you would think we wouldn't have to do studies on that, but I know we got to prove I know we got to prove to people that that's the one reason kids are playing the game, right? And that's also the reason why they're dropping out of the game, because they're not having fun and they're going to other sports. Now, we encourage in some of our shows, we've encouraged our coaches especially, listen, have some days where you go to the field, let them play a game on their own, and you just sit in the stands and watch. The only reason you're there, obviously, is for safety reasons nowadays. But let them just play on their own. Let them do their own thing. That'd be a lot of fun one time to do that, at least once a week, so the kids can kind of, have their own lineups, do whatever they like to do, you know, and the coach just watches. Now, go ahead. I know you got something to say. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah. No, I agree. Just learn the game. Just learn the game and have some fun. Yeah, really good move. I think that would be I wish that would be just part of the regular curriculum, Pete.
Well, it forces kids to communicate on their own, to like you said, learn the game on your own, do things on your own, make decisions on your own, make mistakes on your own. Those are all things that, you know, are part of the development of a human being, of a young man or a girl that are playing the, you know, sports. So we encourage that, and that's why I'm glad you brought it up also. And before we forget, all our audience out there, don't forget, go to baseballoutsidethebox.com. You're listening to the show right now. We have a 5-set DVD for coaches that has over 100 games and drills to help you run a fun and organized practice. We're going to get into the practice part with Jeff now. Jeff, I want to talk because, I know you've talked many times about practice organization. I want to give the audience a brief overview. I know this is another show in itself, but give a brief overview of, you know, things that they should be starting with off with practice, some of the things that, and especially related to baseball, some of the things that they should be concentrating on in during the practice, and something they should end with practice that really helps the fun aspect.
Yeah. Pete, this is a real important conversation, and you're right. We should almost dedicate a show to this topic for sure. But just a quick overview. I just think we've really gotten away from the value of practice. Okay. And, you know, when we look at some of the really, really good long-term athlete development models, there's actually very smart ratios when it comes to practice versus competition. And one of the things we're seeing, especially in baseball, and it's one of the reasons that we're seeing the injury rate soar so high, is, Pete, we're focused so much on competition, especially through those developmental years, that it's really almost setting us back more than it's moving us forward. Baseball is a really, really interesting game. As a matter of fact, when the sports scientists in Canada sat down to build the long-term athlete development model for baseball, again, these weren't big baseball guys. You know, they'd gone through a bunch of different sports in Canada already and build the models. And, you know, they start out from when a young person is, you know, 0 to 6 years old, right up to they're into their 20s in adulthood, and if they go the high performance route versus just the recreation route. So it was really a great exercise for everybody. Mm-hmm. But when they finally got to baseball, one of the things that I heard from the sports scientists that were working on the project was they just had to sit back and look at this game, because it was like no other sport they'd ever seen before, right? I mean, here you have baseball is a really, really cool sport. This is one of the reasons I think I love training baseball players, because it is a team sport. So there's a team dynamic there for certain, but mm-hmm. at some point in time, it's you and the baseball. And that requires such a high level of skill and refined skill that you just don't see in other sports. I mean, in hockey, you can pass the puck and rely on your teammates. Football, basketball, very similar. But very, very rarely is it you versus the pitcher, you versus the baseball. And that's one of the cool things about baseball. Listen, baseball is one of those games that if all you do is play, it actually probably takes away, Pete, more than it gives back. Mm-hmm. And that being said, that just reminds us how important a good structured practice can really be.
Yeah, and I believe if you have a good structured practice, that's what's going to keep kids in the game, and it's going to make them better players. And, you know, because they're having fun and they're learning, right? I mean, so that's what it's all about. So give our audience an idea. What would you do? And it doesn't have to be skill specific, but give us an idea. What would you do prior, like as the practice, well, yep. once it starts, and then go towards the end?
Yeah, perfect. Got it, man. So hey, listen, one of the things we mentioned already is just this classic warm up. Mm-hmm. Every single game in practice, we like to run a very, very regular routine warm up where, you know, we do a dynamic run, which might be, you know, a couple of laps around the field or a jog to center field and back. And then we get into some change of direction drills, maybe some 10-yard sprint back pedals. We get into a functional dynamic warm-up, and, you know, we go from a moving series of low intensity to a static sort of, you know, standing dynamic warm-up for the shoulders, torso. You know, we do some stationary stuff, and then we get game ready. We always finish our warm-up. I like to finish our warm-up what I call is a position-specific agility drill, something that's really multi-direction, change of direction, and then boom, we go into our throwing program. So we've got this beautiful warm-up that gets our players at every single level, our big league guys right down to our little grassroots entry-level players, ready for the game of baseball. And that warm-up, Pete, you know, I know practice time is precious, mm-hmm. but inside of that warm-up period, whether it's 7 minutes or whether it's 15 minutes or whether it's 30 minutes, that is, you could sort of pencil that in as your athlete development time. Because if you take that period and every single time you practice or play a game and actually teach athletic movement or functional movement skills, oh my goodness, inside of 2 or 3 weeks, inside of 4 to 6 practices, you can change a career path of a young athlete. And so for me, that warm-up period at the start of your practice, for me, is one of the most important periods that we have in terms of access to our young athletes. And we really do spend a lot of time, you know, mapping out what that period looks like. No matter how much time you have, make it constructive. Because here's the one thing we know. When kids are getting better, they're having fun.
Absolutely. We are on Baseball Outside the Box. You're listening to Jeff Kruschel, Director of Athletic Performance and Talent Development for Crush Performance, also a consultant for Major League Baseball all over the world. You know, hey, here's what's great, Jeff. We are jumping to hockey. Get this. I don't think you anticipated this part, but next week I'm going to be interviewing my childhood friend who's an incredible story of hockey, making it to the top. He's never played any hockey in high school, college, or professional ball, but You know, he made himself one of the best coaches in the game. He's one of the most progressive, innovative coaches that I've ever seen. I'll give you a quick background, and then I'll ask you what the question is. You know, he made it all the way up. Now he's with the Columbus NHL team as one of the coaches. Never played a sport, obviously, at that level. He trained the Blackhawks during the strike by himself. Jonathan Tays actually called him and said, hey, we'd like for you to train us during this time period. And that was 6 weeks. And, you know, Kenny McCutcheon is his name. And Kenny, you know, we grew up together. And Kenny thought it was myself calling. You know, instead it was Jonathan Tays, you know, the captain of the team. He thought it was a joke. But I'm bringing that up simply because, you know, you had a talk. You had a series on your radio show where you talked to Rick Carriere, I believe, the senior director of player development for the Edmonton Oilers. And I also, uniquely, J.J. Piccolo, vice president, assistant GM of player development for the Kansas City Royals. And Kenny and I, you know, since we were little and just recently, we talk about cross-training, learning from each other's skills. And, you know, you did interviews with these two teams, and the interviews were about them talking to each other about helping themselves, develop players. Can you give us a little background of what you learned from these guys and why we can learn from other sports?
Yeah, so this was a really cool story. So I know the guys in Kansas City really well. I also have done some work with the Oilers and the NHL and helped those guys out quite a bit. Great group there as well. They had a fantastic run this year. But a couple years ago, in one of our just casual meetings with the Oilers, they were just asking about baseball development. And Rick Carriere, who is the director of player development for the team, asked me, he said, hey, Jeff, look, if you were going to look at a team in baseball that's really doing some unique things in terms of player development, you know, what team would you mention, or what team would you point out as, you know, a team to maybe look at? And of course, Pete, there's a all the teams are doing really cool things. But when you look at some of the smaller budget teams that really rely on developing from within, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, I mean, since Dayton Moore came on board, Kansas City has been a really, really interesting team to watch. They're very progressive. They have a huge focus on development. And so, of course, I mentioned Kansas City is one of the teams to really have a look at. Mm-hmm. And as the Oilers go around and, you know, play during their season, they were down in Arizona, and they tried to set up a meeting with the Kansas City Royals just to, you know, talk some shop and share some ideas. Now, we're seeing this more and more in professional sports, and I think it's fantastic. They hit and miss. The Kansas City Royals were going to the World Series, so they missed each other. So just this last January, we were finally able to organize JJ and Nick Lido of the Kansas City Royals to come up to Edmonton and see the new arena here and talk to, you know, the Oilers executive about player development. And I had a chance. I had to go to Spain for Major League Baseball, so I just missed the meeting, darn it, which I was kind of upset about because I was really, really interested to see what a Major League Baseball organization would take away from an NHL team and vice versa.
Yeah.
And so when I talked to the guys after the meeting, you know what? I was really fascinated when I talked to JJ about, you know, what their takeaway was from the Oilers and vice versa, what the Oilers took away from Kansas City. And mm-hmm. on the Oilers side, you know, one of the things they really, really appreciated in professional baseball was the length of time it takes to develop a well-rounded, complete player and the levels the players go through inside the organization. So they were really enamored with the process of developing a baseball athlete. Where on the other side, the Kansas City Royals, they really sort of honed in on the Oilers' focus on grit and character and perseverance. And so it was really, really interesting to hear from those two organizations as to what they were focusing on in terms of, you know, the developmental processes from each sport. And I think that's going to lend itself really well for overall athlete development in the big picture as we move forward.
Absolutely. And for everybody out there all over the world, just so you know, I am from Chicago. We're doing the show from the Lineup Media Group Studios. To give you an idea, the number one thing in a recent article here in Chicago by Theo Epstein, the president and president of the Chicago Cubs, was how they select players. And it's interesting what you said, Jeff, because the number one thing was character. if you didn't have character, you're not going to make the Chicago Cubs. You know, they're just not going to sign you in the draft. That's the number one thing they were looking for. Now, we are coming to the end of the show, unfortunately, because as we said, this is, and we're going to have to bring you back because, you know, we just got to continue the conversation. We've got some great topics here. The one area, don't forget, everybody, go to Facebook, go to Crush Performance. Jeff's got what's called the Talent Grid. That's a group of individuals who are experts around the world that are sharing ideas. So you can join just by going to Facebook and go to Crush Performance there. So don't forget. Now, Jeff, this probably should have been the first topic. I don't know. Maybe we're saving the best for last. And it's coming from my part because I'm a big believer in this, and I know you are too. You mentioned Baseball Canada. You know, I think they're one of the best in the world in long-term development. And so I just want to reiterate that they are definitely the best out there that I have seen when it comes to long-term development. So when it comes to coaches, you know, everywhere around the world, the most coaches in baseball come from one level. They don't come from college. They don't come from high school. They certainly don't come from professional baseball. They come from our volunteers from around the world and in the U.S.
Right.
More coaches that are volunteers. These are moms and dads, as you know, and our audiences know. They give their best. They're trying their best. But they don't get a lot of support a lot of ways. You know, there's a lot of information and go out there on YouTube and get all kinds of information, but you don't know if it's good, bad, or indifferent. And I'm a big supporter for the last 30 years of helping our volunteers become, you know, the best they can be in the development of sport. And what you said earlier, making it as fun as possible. But we've got to be able to help them. So give us an idea what Baseball Canada, yourself, have done to help volunteer coaches. What kind of the process has been so that because you have seen results, and that's what's important, is seeing results in kids playing the game and getting better.
Yeah. And Pete, I think, you know, one of the things that we've seen, you know, even with our Major League Baseball programs that we do all over the world, the focus on the athlete has been really, really critical in helping kids enjoy the game of baseball, but also stay in the game of baseball. You know, that if you remember our four priorities for development, it was rest and recovery and sleep. Then we had nutrition, hydration, posture. The fourth one we didn't really get to talk about in this one because it is a topic of its own, but it's movement. And if you can teach an athlete to move properly, you mm-hmm. open up doors and windows of opportunity at every single level of the game in every single sport. So, you know, dedicating that warm-up period to teaching movement and showing them how to move properly. And trust me, movement isn't just running straight ahead. It's teaching them how to backpedal properly. It's teaching them how to move laterally. Swinging mm-hmm. a bat is movement. Throwing a baseball is movement. That's one of the things we've done for sure. And that comes in with a good practice plan. Now, here's one of the focuses that I really like to share with coaches, because I think this is at the base of the success of some of our programs. When it comes to, you know, the overall annual plan, we really encourage that coaches sit down and just map it out. And the big problem that we're seeing, as we kind of alluded to already, is the number of competitions in relationship to the number of practices. We should be practicing way, way more. Listen, one of the most important age groups in the sporting cycle, in the sporting development cycle, are the 9 to 12-year-olds. That's where skill acquisition happens, Pete. And unfortunately, you know, we're competing so much at that level that we never really practice the fundamentals enough to give these kids an opportunity. So here's just some simple numbers that mm-hmm. I'll throw out to help people understand, you know, kind of what we're talking about. In the age group of 9 to 12 years of age, we like to see 70% of the time with those athletes practicing. That's training and practicing in only 30% competition. Now, I'm not saying that 70% of training can't be fun, you know, games with your team, but I'm saying when it comes to competition, 30% competition, 70% training. Mm-hmm. When the athletes start getting older, 12 to 16 years of age, we like to see 60% training and a little more competition, 40%. And then once they start learning the craft, and now we have to start teaching them how to use the craft in the game. You know, this age from 16 to 23 years of age, there's a massive shift. We see a shift going to 40% training, 60% competition. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we know what happens as you get to college and professional ball, and rightfully so, we're dominated by competition. But we've got it backwards. We're competing way too much through those developmental years. And I think that's really, really at the crux of some of the issues we're seeing in the game of baseball for sure.
Wow, that's great. That's great information. Love to hear that. And finally, could be a curveball. I don't think it is. You're probably a pretty good curveball hitter, too. Let me throw you this now. You've got a league. You got an organization. You're the head guy now. Or you got a national federation. And I know it could be another show, but you're the head guy, and you've got to make sure that your coaches are being trained. Give us a little background how you would do that.
Yeah, so here's one of the beautiful things. And again, you mentioned the Canadian model, and one of the reasons I like it so much, Pete, is because the emphasis, you know, on the progressive player development, running right alongside that progressive player development model is a coaching development model. It runs in parallel. So, you know, if you're a coach that's coaching 6 to 9 year olds, I would emphasize, and we have a list of things that are really important for athletes that age. Here's what we need to focus on. Here's what we need to learn at the ages of 6 to 9 years of age. And if you're a coach coaching that age, here's your curriculum. And that helps all of our coaches just sort of focus on what they should be doing in those game on the practices and what the emphasis should be in the games. And it's certainly not winning for sure. And as the players age, you know, that 9 to 12, 12 to 16, 16 to 23 and upwards, we have coaches that move up with those players, and they're coaching the appropriate content that's going to help those players succeed at that physiological age and that biological age. Because, you know, if we look at the growth development curve of an athlete over time, Pete, there are windows of opportunity for development. There's certain time periods in an athlete's growth and development where you can really capitalize on speed, for example. And there's other windows where aerobic fitness, there's windows where you can capture and really develop aerobic fitness, strength. Again, there's a second window for speed, but there's also windows for skill. But here's what a lot of people don't realize. If the athletes don't get exposed to what needs to happen in those windows, they're gone forever. You cannot recapture that. Does that make sense? And it's so important to know. And so this progressive development plan, if I were king of sport, Pete, and let me say I might be running a campaign next year, so maybe you can help me get votes.
I'm voting for you. Don't worry.
Okay, man. Hey, I joke, but hey, if I were king of sport, we would really, really pay a lot of attention and give a lot of support to the great people who volunteer to coach our kids out there, because that's really, really where the magic happens.
Absolutely. And God bless all our volunteers around the world and, you know, for what you do to help develop the sport. And then we're just here, you know, we try to give you a support system. You know, don't forget, keep getting educated. It's important because as you listen to Jeff, if the coaches and parents are educated in the proper ways and the kids benefit from it, they get better. Or as Jeff said, the windows of opportunity. What a great line. I love that. I'll never forget that phrase. You know, if they have those right windows because the parents and coaches have been educated, kids will develop faster and better. So that's fantastic, Jeff. I just got to tell you, if there's anything last you want to, you know, tell our coaches, players, or parents around the world, I'm going to leave that open to you. And then on behalf of Baseball Outside the Box, I just can't thank you enough for being on the show.
Oh, no. And I guess that would be my final statement. Hey, thanks for having me on the show, Pete. You know, we get so entrenched in our worlds of helping athletes get better. And, you know, we just, you know, I've been lucky enough to be in this world of high performance sports and, you know, work in Major League Baseball and work for Major League Baseball globally. And I've just had an opportunity to meet people like yourself and experts. I've just had access to experts at every single level. So you gain all this information and knowledge. And to be able to share it like this, I can't tell you how thankful I am. And you know, I at the bottom, at the end of the day, it's a game. It's a game. And I think if we can keep it fun and understand that getting better makes it a ton of fun, we'll be doing a lot of good things. Just remember, outside of a good, the main focus of our baseball and sporting development programs is to get people involved for life. And when you have a good system, Pete, the beautiful sidebar, the beautiful outcome, and sometimes the beautiful spin-off of that is we produce these awesome high-performance athletes that want to chase down the dream of becoming the best in the world. And there's nothing more rewarding than that on both streams, seeing people playing the sport recreational for life, playing with their kids and coaching their kids, and to see a young athlete aspire and reach his dreams of getting a college scholarship or playing professional baseball. That's where you can go to bed at night and sleep really well. And it's a ton of fun when it all comes together.
Absolutely. And thank you, everybody around the world, for listening to Baseball Outside the Box. Thank all of you on live on Facebook. I'm really appreciate, you know, being on the whole time. Now you know why Jeff Crochelle is coming back, because we've got to continue this conversation, because what you heard today is just a small amount of what we need to cover. If you go to crushperformance.com, go to the podcast, because you can listen to all the shows. It's outstanding. I listen to them all the time. I've gained so much knowledge from them. So we're going to have Jeff back. Again, thanks, Jeff. And to all our listeners, don't forget, you know, we're on Twitter at Baseball Out. We've got all kinds of tips, videos, and just communicate with us on Twitter. And please share the show. If you're a new listener, go to our website, Baseball Outside the Box. Join on Twitter or on iTunes. That's really fast. And if you've been listening to the show and you really like it, give us a great rating, because that would really help the show out. So don't forget, baseballoutsidethebox.com, and our email, info@baseballoutsidethebox.com. Email us all the time on anything you'd like. We'll get back to you right away. We don't waste time on the emails. And remember, coaches' education is the key to building the foundation of our sport. So keep getting smarter by listening to the show that interviews baseball's best coaching minds with innovative thoughts that like to challenge the status quo. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Have a great coaching day, and we'll see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.